New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 77 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. John, we're here to break down another interesting game for the Jaguars. They've had losses against backup quarterbacks, this time falling to the Joe Flacco-led Browns. Is the world ending, John? Do you think the sky is falling? Is this it? Is it curtains for the 2023-24 Jaguars?
Not curtains in the sense that they probably have done enough to, you know, they haven't yet punched a ticket to the playoffs. Obviously, you know, they could lose like the next four games and finish, 8-9 would be their record if they did that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, with games against the Panthers and Buccaneers, and I still don't think the Titans are even like spry. Like, I don't even think they're feisty. Like, yeah. I think the Ravens game would probably chalk up as a loss, but they have three winnable games down the stretch. But is the idea of this team doing anything in the postseason gone? It's getting pretty close. It's getting pretty close. Like, these are two extremely winnable games, and, you know, on paper and even on the field, like, they literally lost because of stuff that they keep doing to themselves. I mean, so what? They lost by 4 points. Think about the red zone interception to Ridley. That takes away at least 3 points. Lawrence getting sacked out of field goal range after one of their turnovers. That's another 3 points. Like, they very easily, if they didn't shoot themselves in the foot on offense, like, very easily could have won this game, much like last week they could have won if, you know, they didn't, you know, miss a field goal or they didn't do a few things, you know, here and there, if they were connected with Ridley right before halftime on that weird play where Trevor, you know, dropped a snap and then chucked it deep. So it definitely doesn't feel like anything, like any like the margins of luck are really going their way, it seems like. And on top of that, they're beating themselves. So I don't know, man. Episode 77. They've almost given up 77 points to Jake Brown and Joe Flacco. It's regardless of the context of how those quarterbacks did it, they still did it. And it's not time to pack it in yet, but it's definitely, I think, time to wonder, you know, even in the probability that this team makes the playoffs, what are they going to do when they get there?
Yeah, I think this team has been, like, compared to the Lions a lot, and for good reason, over the past year. I think right now, no one really considered the Lions, like, true Super Bowl contenders unless they happened to lock up the number one seed so that the road in the NFC playoffs would go through Detroit and Jared Goff would be able to play every playoff game in a dome. And I think it's, like, not really for the quarterback, but it's, like, a similar story for the Jaguars in that if they were able to get, like, a one seed or even a two seed, then people might be like, all right, they've got, like, a solid chance or, like, path to reaching a Super Bowl and being a real contender. But I mean, now that that's, like, unraveled a little bit, I mean, the Jags still are leading the division. They're still fourth in the AFC, and it's definitely getting a little bit murky in that conference in terms of what the playoff pictures are going to be looking like.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the Chiefs did lose last night. I guess the Bills and the Ravens did win.
Great.
Dolphins
great
tonight against the Titans, but – yeah, like, to me, it's like they're still like a playoff caliber team, even with these like two ugly losses. But now it's like pretty limited hope for what they might do once they do get to the postseason.
Yeah, no, I mean, Ravens are two games in front of them now. And, you know, that's with them having to play the Ravens on Sunday Night Football. The Ravens are rolling right now. They look like the most complete team in the AFC. Michael DeRocco tweeted last night, per ESPN Stats and Infos, that Jags had a 96% chance of making the playoffs entering the game and only dropped to 92%. But their chance of winning the South dropped from 88% to 67%. And then, I mean, you still even look behind Jaguars at the rest of the AFC. There's like, what, like four or five teams at like 7-6 right now who are like just a game behind them, including the Buffalo Bills, who are playing better football than the Jags right now. There's several teams in that range who are playing better football right now. The Jags maybe, you know, catching a break. C.J. Stroud potentially may miss time. It looked like he had a pretty clear concussion yesterday. The Colts' magic kind of ran out against woodchipper quarterback Jake Browning. Yeah, is there a quarterback controversy in Cincinnati?
There, you know, shouldn't be. I mean, it's between who's going to be the backup quarterback between Jake Browning and Cincinnati Mandarin Bengal or whatever.
The Bengalorian.
Yeah, there we go.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
That'd be the on competition.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can just start right in with the offense. I thought it was one of the offense's, you know, worst games of the season. So, the first two touchdowns, they were set up by really short fields by the defense. The last two touchdowns, one came with like 8 minutes left. That was probably the best drive of the game. I think it was like a 9-play, 60-yard drive. Other one came with like 1.5 minutes left when they were down by 10. It's, I don't know if you'd call it garbage time, but there's at least some litter on the side of the road, you know? you're getting there, you know?
For sure. But,
like, Doug Peterson said after the game that the offense was – he felt just disconnected all game, and Trevor and the receivers weren't on, you know, the same page. I really think the story of the game is, you know, the Jaguars, their connection to their receivers just went absolutely nowhere. You know, I tweeted out yesterday, Trevor Lawrence, when targeting Zay Jones and Calvin Ridley, went 9 of 27 for 82 yards and 3 interceptions. When targeting anybody else, so Evan Ingram, Travis Etienne, Perkel Washington, Dearness Johnson, he was 19 of 22 for 175 yards and 3 touchdowns. So, literally, when he targeted, you know, Zay and Calvin, things went horribly wrong. When he targeted anybody else, like Evan Ingram, I thought Evan Ingram probably should have had like 20 targets. Yeah. he was their best offensive player, I thought. He still was starting the team in targets. You just like you saw how much I thought they missed Christian Kirk, because it seemed like they had no easy answers on third down, especially against man coverage. Guys just weren't getting open. I didn't think Zay Jones looked good. Maybe not a ton of egregious plays from him, but he had like I felt like four or five chances to make like a tough catch and didn't make any of them. And you know, when you have injuries at wide receiver, along the offensive line, along, you know, when your quarterback's injured, like, you have to elevate your game some and bring down some of those. And it just seemed like he wasn't anything, you know, doing any of that. And when he did bring it down, you know, he wasn't making an impact. It felt like every deep pass towards him, you know, wasn't really having a chance to be completed. And then Ridley, it was a weird game for Ridley, I guess we're really apologists. That was.
You can put all the blame on me. I'll shoulder all of it. But yeah, none of us like thought it was going to be a really a big really week in the Cleveland game. At least
you did.
Only I did not. You said every week is a Calvin Ridley week, and I probably laughed and was like, "Yeah, sure." But like when we were doing the props and stuff, I didn't have Ridley written down.
I remember you saying Ridley over 150.
No way.
You're thinking that up. He's the guy. Yeah, no, against like this like specific Browns defense, like man coverage, bringing lots of pressure, like Christian Kirk probably would have been fed, you know, this game. And
yeah,
you're just seeing more and more how Lawrence and Ridley just aren't really there on the same page. So there was that one interception in the red zone. I'd say it's probably – it was the biggest or second biggest play of the game, counting the sack that took them out of field goal range because they both directly took points away from them. Mm-hmm. it looked like Trevor expected Ridley to, you know, run his like quick glance route and immediately be looking for a ball, and Ridley instead like ran into like a wave of Browns defenders and wasn't even looking for it. And you could see immediately Lawrence was like telling him like, look at me.
Look at me.
And then, Lawrence's last interception, Lawrence said that he put that one on him. Doug Peterson said it was more or less on Calvin Ridley. He was like, you throw it to one of your best receivers and you're hoping it's either an incomplete or they make a play on the ball. It seemed like even like the route, like he wasn't really expecting, you know, to be the hot there. You can question going empty when it was like, what, like third and like a yard and a half. I understand not just going under center and running it because they suck at doing that, but a deep shot out of empty, I do understand criticizing, but it really, I think, showed that not a receiver one for this team at this point in time. That's not to say it can never happen. I still expect them to be the team next year, and maybe as they get more reps together, you know, maybe some of those issues of not being on the same page goes away. But for at least this point in time, he feels like a complimentary piece on the offense. And when you lose one of the guys that helps like stir the drink and makes their offense go, like Kirk, he's, you know, much less effective.
Yeah, I think the Jags game plan for this season was to like go into it with a three-headed monster at wide receiver between like Kirk, Ridley, and Zay. And even though a lot of outsiders would put Zay like at a much lower tier than those first two, like okay, even though everyone put Zay Jones at a much lower level. I was gonna say like maybe us and Jackson would like put him like a little bit closer to that group. I might have at least.
I would not,
because it was he had an okay training, a nice training camp. Anyway, they were like, those were their three starters, and they were expecting like more of just like getting something out of that unit as a whole than like Ridley being like this alpha dominant awesome guy, and then like just naturally Ridley and Zay would like get open looks. Like that wasn't really their process. It was like, we're like, feel comfortable with our three starting receivers, and like because we have three receivers that we're comfortable in starting, like we're gonna have like answers for everything. But then like obviously Calvin was a bit rustier than the team would have probably hoped, coming back from 2 years off football. Zay Jones has an injury early in the season. Christian Kirk has injury now. Travis has been a little bit banged up, even though we're talking about receivers, but like just they haven't really had like their full core intact for really any one game. I'll be surprised if they started and finished a game with Zay, Ridley, and Kirk all fully healthy. Like maybe there was one game. And so, like, obviously their receiver plan didn't really work out because of a lot of injuries and moving pieces and such. And then on top of that, it's like Lawrence just had a high ankle sprain and he's down his top left tackle. And then his other left tackle goes down in the game, and you're on the road against statistically the best defense in the NFL, who plays really aggressively. And we saw that a bunch of times with like some questionable non-calls in terms of like Browns defenders getting like two Jags receivers just like a half second early and kind of disrupting patch points. So like it was just a pretty tough draw. And so I definitely think that like the story of that game is like the disconnect between Lawrence and his wide receivers now that Christian Kirk is out. But I think like just a bigger issue for the Jags in general is their like run blocking, because like I saw some complaints about how the Jags like never really tried to establish the run, and they like never really kept with it. And like we've talked on this podcast about how like when they've been able to get the run going, then like obviously play action opens up much easier and just like everything is a little bit easier to do. But I wouldn't really blame them for not running a lot against the Browns just because it wasn't really working a lot. And like obviously, again, Travis isn't fully healthy. So I think like there was just a lot of factors that went into this. Like they shot themselves in the foot plenty of times, like you said at the top, but then like so many different injuries, playing on the road against a really good defense.
Fumbled like, in their own territory on third and long for really no reason.
Like it's one loss. I'm I did say that I don't think they're like Super Bowl contenders or anything like that, but like I'm not really overreacting to this loss as bad as it seems to lose to Joe Flacco.
What was that the worst the run game has looked all season? Because like obviously ETN 14 for 35 and a touchdown, not good numbers, but it's like he was getting hit for like 5 and 6 yard losses. It wasn't just getting stuffed. It was like ruining and like they came out of halftime and immediately had a 6 yard loss on it on first down. Like it, second and 16 on the second play of the half. Like I can't remember the last time the running game looked that bad. Like there's been plenty of times this year where it's been non-existent and gets stuffed, but to the point where Browns defenders were legit like living like 4 to 5 yards in the backfield. And yeah, Jaguars, Ezra Cleveland got hurt, so they had Blake Hance. Tyler Shatley was in there at left guard. They're missing Britton Strange. It was obviously like kind of like a patchwork like offensive line. I believe my prediction on Myles Garrett not getting a sack was technically correct. We don't count 2-point conversions. It doesn't go on the stat sheet. But nonetheless, like I think Lawrence like attempted like his third most passes in a game. And he attempted 50 passes. Only the third time in his career he's done that. And the first two came when he was a rookie. And regardless of how he feels, like Lawrence on that ankle and against this defense, like throwing it 50 times just it isn't a winning, you know, strategy. But I don't know what else they can do because they literally just cannot move the ball on the ground as things currently are. And I do think that's a big reason the offense looks the way it does too, is because teams more or less know that they have to throw it and they can – really throw all their resources in the kitchen sink at stopping the passing game because the running game isn't scaring anybody. Like, I know they tried Wildcat a few times. They had like a couple outside runs that had some decent gains, but it just overall, they can't move the ball on the ground.
I was going to say, I felt like the Wildcat snaps were the only thing that was working for them in the run game. And then eventually they like ran it one too many times for a negative loss.
I was going to say, like, how many times can you realistically run it? Because it also kind of telegraphs the defense. Like, yeah, maybe they don't know exactly what style of run and what, like, blocking is coming at them. But everybody in the world knows that when ETN's in the Wildcat, like, he's getting the ball.
Right. Or handing off to Tank like he did one time. But unfortunately, Tank did not reach 5 touches somehow, which is crazy.
How many snaps do you think Tank played yesterday?
2.
1. And I specifically do not remember it.
Was it on a quarterback sneak? I feel like Lawrence, did he have 1 quarterback sneak early in the game? Maybe.
I don't think so.
I guess not.
Maybe well, so. You missed on that one.
Yeah, I'll go find I didn't come prepared to this episode. I'll find some cardboard for Friday.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's working. It's at a sign shop. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be like the size of like a giant fake cashier's check. I actually want you to go walk up and down Moncrief with honk if you've been balkyballed. That's actually a new punishment.
That's not one I'm agreeing to.
No.
Yeah. Hey, the cardboard sign saying I was wrong about Tank Bigsby, that's one thing.
Yeah. So say you're Press Taylor. He definitely did like things wrong in this game, but what? I mean, how would you really go about like even coordinating this Jaguars offense? Like, you don't have a running game. Your quarterback's not on the same page. Your one receiver, the other receiver, looks like he's running with cement boots on. I mean, only thing I can think of is spam targets to Evan Engram, but it seemed like the Browns were expecting that. Like, I think on one of like the late third downs, like Trevor looked like he wanted to go to him, but the Browns were like doubling him underneath. So like, what even are the answers for it to you?
The one thing that comes to mind is to try to find some more trust in Tank Bigsby, because like, I think the Jaguars drafted him with the thought that like, yeah, obviously he'll be like a short yardage back, the goal line back.
I thought this was a bit at first.
Can I finish the take?
I thought this was a bit at first. Go ahead.
I don't know. But it's like, I think they drafted Tank obviously to be short yardage, goal line, et cetera, to like be the between the tackles guy. But I think like more specifically, they drafted him to be the power guy because last year at the beginning of the season, Jags ran a lot of zone because like zone is like you kind of like it's hard to run out of shotgun sometimes because like the type of plays you can run become limited. And so a lot of times you're just running zone out of shotgun. And both Peterson and Lawrence had like shotgun heavy backgrounds. Plus Phil Rauscher, the offensive line coach, had like a wide zone or just zone running influence from his days in Minnesota. And so Jacksonville started off last season with like running more zone than anything else. But now by like this time right now today, they're like more of a gap heavy team. And they're trying to like, it's just like kind of like the nature of the league. Like you saw like the Chiefs do this too, when they like, they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire and then invested a lot in the interior offensive line. And now they're like a really heavy gap / power run blocking team. And so I think that like Travis is just like not the kind of guy to give double digit power handoffs to. And Tank Bigsby hypothetically is that type of back. So I think that they just like don't really have like the right back to like mix with like the right type of scheme stuff that they want to do in the run game, because like I said last week about how the run game is missing Jamal Agnew, but a lot of like that motion stuff comes on zone plays. So part of the reason that they've gone away from like so much motion before like run plays is probably partly because obviously Jamal Agnew's on injured reserve right now, but also because like that happens a lot more with zone plays, and the Jags are more of a gap running team, or at least they want to be. And so I think if they truly want to be a gap running team and truly want to like do what they were planning on doing in terms of like flowing with trends league wide, then like they got to like really give either Tank or D'Ernest like 5+ touches and like see if either of them can actually get going in the run game. Cause obviously like whatever offensive line personnel you're putting out there like isn't going to be the reason that you're like winning in the run game right now. I think you just got to like kind of have to give either D'Ernest or Tank more chances and kind of hope that they prove you right. That would be my thing if I were Press Taylor, because I can't really think of anything else.
I did not expect Tank Bigsby to be your answer. I'm not gonna lie to you. I thought you were like pulling my leg at
like where's the punchline? / D'Ernest Johnson, but like like because now that I like see how much they've transitioned from zone to gap. Because last year I was like, oh, they're transitioning from zone to like just a bunch of stuff, and I thought they were just trying to have a pretty diverse run game in general, so they like, hypothetically have something to beat any opponent. But now I think they're like actually trying to be a power scheme, but like that's just not really Travis Etienne's MO.
Yeah, it definitely felt like with the picks of Bigsby and Stray and Drew's, them trying to become more versatile in the running game. I just wonder if they have the offensive line like for that still. You know, like Luke Fortner isn't going to push anybody around. I don't think Sheriff is like he used to. I don't think Anton will. Left tackle, regardless who's playing that, I don't think so. I agree with you. That's what, like, they need that power element. I just feel like up front, the built for the opposite. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, what were your stances on both Doug going for it on 4th-and-3 at their own 38 with about 4 minutes left, and then the 2-point conversion after the Evan Ingram's second touchdown? The announcers were being weird. They were, like, making it sound like if you didn't get the 2-point conversion, it completely wiped out the necessity for the onside kick. And I was like, no, you still got to get the onside either way. I thought the 2-point made sense. Like, it's basically deciding overtime right there, you know? Like, if you get it or not.
Right.
Like, it's just doing it without having to play the overtime. If you don't get it, then, you know, you lose in overtime. If you get it, then you win. I thought that was fine. The 4th-and-3 decision I thought was interesting. That was the play I was thinking of where – Ingram was double teamed. They attempted a 15-yard pass on 4th-and-3. That was a play to me where that was like the play of the game. I felt like where it was obvious like they missed Christian Kirk, because when they lined up for it, I thought in my head, I have no idea how they get 3 yards. Yeah, like there's no easy answer.
Yeah.
What, What were your thoughts on like just going for it there in general?
I liked both decisions to go for the 2-point too, because like you summed it up really well for the 2-point conversion. Like they were basically making the decision in overtime because you would rather like go for the win there while you have the ball on the 2-yard line, mm-hmm. as opposed to like trusting your offense or defense against the Browns, honestly. Because like I feel like nothing that the Jaguars defense had done that afternoon like made you really trust them to get like a big stop, even though like Caldwell's defense has been good that in general for the most part this season. Like I don't know if anyone in Jacksonville would have like said with confidence, yeah, like if we defer the kickoff in overtime, then like we should be all right. And then like especially the other way around though, so like even if the Jags like received the ball to start overtime, like they weren't having a lot of success against the Browns defense. So it would have been pretty tough to go to even get enough yards for a field goal, let alone drive down the field and score a game-winning touchdown. So I totally think that, like, the decision to go for two there makes a lot of sense based on, like, just the way the game was going. And then I like the decision to go for it on 4th and 3 because even though, like, I think you have a point in terms of saying before the play, like, how are they going to get these 3 yards? Like, it is only 3 yards, and you are down. Were they down 1 touchdown at that point?
I think so. Yeah, I think they were down just a touchdown because that set up the Browns going up by 10.
Yeah, but like you just don't really know how many more opportunities you're going to get, especially against like this Browns offense, which has had success in both the run and the pass. And like Stefanski is one of those coaches that's pretty good at like passing when you're expecting a run, especially in crunch time or whatever. So I liked both decisions.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. All right, Gus, we're going to ahead and take a break. We'll come right back to give our eulogy to Mike Caldwell's head coaching candidacy. We'll be right back. Gus, I'm afraid it might be Jover. that was it. So we talked plenty about how inept the Jaguars offense was against Cleveland. I thought the defense was slightly better than the offense was. But when you factor in that they were playing a backup geriatric quarterback, maybe that should change like that answer. Like, so they came up with some stops, like 2 of the Browns touchdown drives. Like one was a 22-yard drive that was set up off a turnover. And one was a 48-yard drive that was set up off an interception. But, like, you had 3 touchdowns alone that nobody was near the guy. And that shouldn't happen in the NFL level. The first one, it was, like, what, like 3rd and 1, maybe 3rd and inches. And the Browns came out with, like, a jumbo package, you know, to look like they were going to run. Jaguars sent pressure, and David Njoku, literally nobody around him at all.
No one had seen zip code. It was insane.
I think his 2nd touchdown was also on play action. It wasn't the exact situation, but again, nobody was near him. Stiff arms, Andre Sisco, you know, into the earth, like the core of Cleveland as a city.
Yeah.
And then the 3rd one, they send pressure again on, what was it, 4th and 1? And Darius Williams slips, trying to cover David Bell, scores a 40-yard something touchdown. David Bell is one of the slowest receivers in the NFL, for context.
Yeah, you said last week he could be even a 40, so it would have been entertaining to see you score that touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. So that's 21 points right there that were given up, like just like because like they got outclassed, like in terms of like schematically on defense. Like you take into account the opening drive too, it was, yeah, it was 6 plays, 75 yards, 3 first downs. They had like a tackle for like a 1-yard gain on a run play, and then every other play picked up like between like 9 and 35 yards. Like it just seemed like Stefanski had Caldwell's number for most of the day. And it seems like when the Jaguars did find success, it was mostly due to Flacco, you know, sucking. Flacco, you know, he's going to get a lot of credit, you know, national media this week, 311 yards, 2 touchdowns. I thought he was bad. I thought he was straight up bad, which is worse for the Jaguars defense that they gave up 31 points and that amount of yardage to him when he clearly wasn't playing well. You know, he was missing all over the place, you know, spraying some passes that really weren't even close. But the Jaguars still made it, like, even Joe Flacco can hit a wide open receiver.
Yeah. Still true today. He can do it.
Yeah.
I think play action was a big part of it because on the broadcast, they showed at one point that Flacco's 8 for 10 with over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns off play action. And I don't know what the final numbers were, but I know that all 3 of his passing touchdowns were off of play action. And I'm sure about half or maybe even more than half of his yardage was off of play action. So I think similar to the Jags offense, like, you'd think that the problems lie in the passing game. Like, there's a big injury to Christian Kirk. There's big injury to, or smaller injury to Tyson Campbell, but your top cornerback in Tyson is out for this game. And obviously that doesn't help your pass defense. But, like, I think the run game is really where, like, the problems start because, again, like, most of Flacco's production came off of play action, especially on that second Njoku touchdown. I couldn't tell you what happened on the first one, but they had like 6 down linemen, and it was just like a funky personnel package that I'm assuming they don't run very much. On the second one, like, there was a linebacker that just bit super hard on play action to, like, leave that gap behind him wide open for Njoku to run through. And so I think, like, not having like a fully healthy Devon Hamilton, but then also fully Fatukazi, who's ruled out for the game as well, really hurt the Jags against this Browns offense, which kind of is definitely one of, like, the more run so that we can pass centric offenses in the league.
Is Mike Caldwell pushing the right buttons against his backup quarterbacks? It feels like he's being, like, uber aggressive, like, sending a lot of heavy blitzes. Should he just be, like, kind of sitting back in, like, 7-man coverages and, like, letting the quarterback try to actually beat them with accuracy and placement, as opposed to – it seems like he's, like, trying to force them into a mistake or into a negative play. And, like, Cleveland, credit to, you know, Kareem Hunt and their tight ends and, you know, that Jeremy Ford, like, they were stopping every blitz. You know, like, they protected extremely well. The Jaguars only had 3 quarterback hits. That's insane. But yeah. Flacco dropped back 40-something times, and they only hit him 3 times. That doesn't compute with me.
Yeah.
Even with the criticisms I have of their pass rush, I still don't see, especially when you blitz as much as they did on passing downs, how you only hit a guy 3 times who's not very mobile.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe what it is that Caldwell is, like, seeing who's starting at quarterback on the other side, and he's like, oh, Jake Browning, Joe Flacco, like, these are the types of quarterbacks that, like, are affected by pressure. So as long as we get some kind of pressure on them, then we feel comfortable with, like, the outcome of each play. But then, excuse me, maybe he just wasn't giving quite enough respect to, like, the offensive schemes and game planners because, yeah, it's Jake Browning and Joe Flacco, but they had some pretty nice play calls and just game plans kind of, like, help set them up. And so, really, like, all Flacco and Browning, what they were doing was playing point guard and just, like, hitting the open passes when they needed to be made.
I feel like it puts more stress on the back end of the defense, you know, because you, like, one slip up and you have David Bell going for, you know, 40-something yards. And I know Jaguars fans are, like, you know, really harping on the injuries. The Browns had a backup left tackle, a backup center, I believe a backup guard, a third string right tackle. Like, this was a, you know, patchwork offensive line too. Yeah. And it just felt like the Jaguars did nothing to make Flacco uncomfortable really all game long.
No, I think that's fair. Their interior is really lacking. Obviously, like, Josh and Trayvon were a little bit quiet relative to some solid recent weeks that they've had, but – like, again, like, I just feel like the Jags defense prides themselves on stopping the run, but also, like, their defensive tackles are almost like the core of the unit, and they're just not performing well enough.
So of their three quarterback hits, one Antonio Johnson, one by Andrew Wingard, one by Tyler Lacy.
Wow. And that one by Tyler Lacy took about like 9 seconds.
On yeah. Like, and that was like more so like caused by like a Josh Allen pressure. Like, yeah. I felt like Allen was getting decent pressure, but just, you know, wasn't able to finish. And otherwise it just, it felt like the Jaguars like just couldn't get like really anything going in that respect.
No, maybe that's also part of the reason that they've been like blitzing and like rather than being like, oh, let's drop seven, like actually Flacco beat us. Is that like, yeah, blitzing will leave some of your guys on an island outside, like a Monteric Brown or a Gregory Jr. But also, like, if you're not getting any pressure like whatsoever, like again, like Caldwell's MO in the passing game is like pressure the quarterback. So I maybe he just wants to do that.
So we can officially say that Trent and et cetera missed on their assessment of the pass rush, especially at the deadline, right?
Yeah. You think now's a good time to declare it?
Well, I declare it then, but I'll go ahead and take an extra victory lap now.
Like, yeah, there you go.
That overconfidence that's like bordering on arrogance that Smoot and Navon Hamilton would be the missing pieces to a pass rush. These are the type of games that, you know, people were banging the table to add a pass rusher for, you know, when you're playing the Jake Brownings and the Joe Flaccos. Like, I'm sorry, Josh Uche, they could have used him yesterday. I feel like Chase Young would be more helpful right now than a third rounder that they're going to use on a plotting running back from an SEC school.
Yeah, I don't know. Their last offseason just didn't make any sense. It's like you like won one playoff game and it was at the hands of like a collapse of a poorly coached Chargers team.
And then you went 9-8.
Yeah, and you're going into the next offseason just like adding depth in the draft and not really doing anything in free agency. It's like at least like pretend you're in win now mode and like go add one cool guy. Like, they did add Calvin Ridley, but that was over a year ago at this point.
Yeah, so very clear that the defense, I think, is missing some pieces it needs to be successful. And yeah, the injuries obviously play a role. I know Tyson's kind of been a shell of himself this year, but not having a Tyson Campbell that they expected in the lineup has obviously played, you know, a huge part. I think at one point in the game, both Andre Sisker and Rayshon Jenkins were hurt, so they had both backup safeties in. Antonio Johnson had a really, you know, impressive game, and we'll get to him later, but he only played 26% of snaps. Greg Jr. played 42% of snaps. Trey Harden's still a better option than Greg Jr. Obviously, though, Antonio Johnson's probably earned some more snaps moving forward. I felt like it was the second consecutive subpar performance from Devin Lloyd. Like, you know, a lot of missed tackles. It felt like the Browns were getting a lot of yards after contact, both in the running game and, you know, in the passing game. Like, choke you on one play, like, just shoved Greg Jr. out of the way on his way to a first down. You remember which one I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it was – so it just feels like this defense is like a shell of the defense that legitimately, like, it wasn't make-believe. Like, they were legitimately like a top-8 defense earlier in the year. They were giving Josh Allen a hell. They gave Patrick Mahomes hell. And now they're getting diced up and dissected. And maybe, yeah, again, I don't think Flacco was good and had an efficient game, but he had three plays where they just straight up weren't covering anybody. And it results in them losing the game. So, I don't know. It definitely feels like the defense has kind of lost its way a bit here.
Yeah, for sure. I think they're going to just need either, like, players to come back from injury or just, like, they're going to need some new players in general in order to kind of like get back to where they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. Like, just looking ahead, you know, you get to January. Like, do you expect this specific defense to hold up against like Miami?
No.
Current Buffalo?
No.
Baltimore?
No. Not even the Chiefs with their like receiver situation. Rashee Rice is like keeps looking a little bit better every game, but. Yeah, no, that was – I feel like we've said this like every other episode since last off season, but like the Jags had like a good enough defense to get through the regular season. And then at the beginning of the regular season, it was better than anyone could have expected, but like, we're going to get to the playoffs. And as we said the whole time, like it was never really enough to compete with the elite quarterbacks and offenses that are in their same conference.
But these last 2 weeks have looked more to me like the defense I expected. And that's not to like put the onus of this game on the defense, because they did have like three like giant plays. You know, like Andrew Wingard, his forced fumble was a really, really impressive second effort. Joe Flacco threw a ball directly into the chest of Darius Williams. Yeah. And then Antonio Johnson, his strip sack, he hit the hell out of Flacco on that. Yeah. You know, so again, this isn't to say the defense is the sole reason they lost the game. I thought the defense was better than the offense, but it's a worrying trend now that the last 2 weeks they've just kind of been, you know, against backup quarterbacks, giving up big plays, giving up wide open plays. And I mean, over the last like month and a half, they were good against the Titans. They were okay-ish against the Texans, you know, maybe closer to good against the Texans. But I mean, three of their last five games now, they've given up 30 or more points.
Yeah, they also lead the league in games with a 300-yard passer against them. With seven such games that they've allowed a 300-yard passer. And it's like two games against Mahomes and Josh Allen, but then the rest is like Gardner Minshew, Derek Carr, Jake Browning, Joe Flacco, CJ Stroud.
That's tough. Yeah, that's tough.
And then like for your, when you were asking like what would you do if you were Press Taylor, what would I do if I were Mike Caldwell? I don't know. Like, I think it's kind of a similar problem where it's like with Press, it's like you don't really have like the personnel to really like figure out new solutions, which is why I'm bringing up like their failed third round rookie running back. And then it's like the same for Caldwell. It's like you can try to like do like the three safety sets again and replace Antonio Johnson with Andrew Wingard and see how that works for you. But like, I don't know what else to say.
Gus, we both know they aren't taking Andrew Wingard off the field.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. It definitely feels like it's tied directly, you know, to personnel. Because, yeah, they're missing some guys in the back end, but how many guys are they missing up front yesterday? Like, just Foley Fatakasi, right?
Yeah.
And
the ghost of him.
And they did nothing to disrupt Flacco. I thought even the running game, how many, like, short yardage situations did they win yesterday? It felt like every third and one, fourth and one, the Browns got with ease.
I was gonna say,
am I wrong in that?
They had the Jags had a couple impressive like short yardage stops. They would always come on like second or third down, and the Browns would still be able to get it on like their second or third try doing it.
And that was the other thing. There were a lot of second and shorts and third and shorts. Didn't feel like the Jaguars were winning on first down nearly the level that it did earlier in the year.
No, that was really the big thing, is that like between Tyson being in and then like having a healthier interior defensive line, like their run game and just early down defenses really start, and they're forcing opposing offenses into third and long situations, which is like where the pass rush could actually cook with like a bunch of stunts, and then also just like the guys being able to pin their ears back. But now, like especially the past 2 weeks, I wouldn't be surprised if like the past 2 weeks were like the lowest average yards to go on third down that the Jags have allowed this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This week's bulky ball. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, would you rather have a player at 5 years, $125 million, who records zero sacks in a game, or would you rather have a player on a fifth-round contract for peanuts?
You did not. This is the worst one. This is the worst one.
For peanuts. Would you rather have the guy making the potentially game-changing play, or the guy who can't get past Blake Hantz? You tell me. Antonio Johnson was a better pass.
Oh, I thought you were going with Tyler Lacy at first because he had one hit. Either way, it's terrible.
No, not doing that. Not doing that one. It's – so So for my bit about Garrett not having any sacks, he still had 3 quarterback hits and a tackle for a loss. Like,
yeah, he was all over the place.
I've seen people like say like he wasn't a factor. No, he completely terrorized them. But I guess like the lone bright spot was, you know, Antonio Johnson, and we'll get more into him in the next segment. But other than him coming along nicely, I'm not sure what there is to be positive about the defense right now. I don't. We'll get into it on Friday, but I'm not sure how you can expect them to contain Lamar and Zay Flowers, and hell, even Odell Beckham just had a really good game against the Rams. So it a lot of questions to be had. But Gus, you got anything else on defense?
No, I would just say that it's like almost the same thing for the offense in terms of like takeaways from the game, because I thought like Parker Washington had another impressive touchdown snag, and that was partly encouraging, A, because it was a good catch, and B, because it was on a slot fade. Shout out Christian, but like that's like a very, very Christian Kirk route, is to win like a slot fade in like the high red zone. And so
it was impressive.
It was nice to see that rep from Washington. And then he only had one other catch on the day, but I thought like between Parker Washington and Antonio Johnson, you're like, okay, you saw like some, like a nice flash or two out of like these day 3 rookies. And that's about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we'll be right back. All right, Gus. Game ball is always tough to give out after a loss. Let's go ahead and start with special teams. You know, I know that's always the hot button one. Yeah. I think you got to give it to Parker Washington.
Dude, yeah,
he had so 26 yard punt return. He had 63 yards as a punt returner. That's more yards than every Jaguar skill player produced other than Evan Engram on Sunday.
Okay.
No other Jaguar skill player, but Evan Engram got 63 yards. I know it's different because it's a punt return. I don't care. He was relatively impactful with the ball in his hands on special.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's nice to see that he's taking the path that, like, good slot receivers taken. Like, Christian Kirk is one. Like, Julian Edelman is the cliche that comes to mind of, like, kind of like a scrappy, small slot receiver who's, like, a late-round pick. I mean, Christian Kirk was a second-round pick, but, like, a guy that's, like, earning his way onto the field with some good special teams reps. So it was nice to see, especially after Washington had, like, some questionable returns in recent weeks, or just, like, questionable decisions on like whether to catch the ball or return it in recent weeks. It was very good to see the rookie make some plays in Jamal Agnew's absence.
I will say he runs like he's playing tag.
Yeah, I can see that.
The way he returns the punts, I'm like, how are you getting yards out of this?
Yeah, there was definitely one return where it's like you're dancing so much, you gotta just like go north to south, but 2 out of 3 good returns. A third one that could have been even better, but definitely a nice special teams performance for him.
Yeah, for sure. All right, defense. I think it's got to be Antonio Johnson. Yeah, his strip sack, huge play. I know he didn't play a lot, but huge play in the strip sack. He had a really impressive like pass breakup on a third down near the red zone against Amari Cooper. I was a big guy saying, no chance you can let this guy play at a slot, but really impressive outing, I thought, from him. I'm struggled to think of any other defender who was really making impact plays. Maybe Darius Williams. He had a pick and three pass breakups.
My game ball, because he had the pick, yeah. 3 PBUs. One of them was on like third down in the fourth quarter that like got the Jags ball back. So I thought he had a really good game, especially considering like that Jacksonville's 2 starting safeties were injured at some point in the second half, and Tyson Campbell and Trey Herndon were both out. Like, he's once like Tyson went out in like week 5 or 6 or whatever earlier in the season, I was a little nervous about Darius, and I was like, he's been playing like a Pro Bowler so far, but maybe with Tyson being out, like he'll kind of come back down to earth, and that still hasn't happened. He's still putting together a Pro Bowl caliber season, even with like the rest of the secondary almost kind of falling apart without him. Bar Antonio Johnson, of course, but I thought it was a really nice day for D. Will.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That won't Won't disagree with you on that one at all. And then offense, I don't know. To me, it's got to be Evan Engram, like, is like the only one, right?
Yeah. He like, shut me up a couple weeks ago. My hot take was that he was like shallow route merchant or crossing route merchant just because he had had a couple of quiet games, and I thought he could have slash should have been more involved, but he certainly got involved on Sunday, and I don't think I remember any catches. He definitely had a few tough, or I don't think I remember any drops, but he definitely had a few tough catches. Had more touchdowns today than he had in the rest of the season previously combined. So
he caught almost 40% of Trevor Lawrence's completions.
Wow.
Yeah, he was targeted 12 times, and he had 11 catches for 95 yards and 2 touchdowns.
I feel like it might have been 50% if you take out, like, Jacksonville's last drive, just because I feel like ETN racked up, like, 5 catches in the last 3 minutes of game time. Yeah,
that's true. So, Ingram is their best skill player right now, to me.
Yeah.
These last 2 weeks especially, he's been, like, on a tear.
I don't think I would go as far as to say as he's their best receiver, because I saw some comments on that, and like when Zay Jones was out early in the year, the Jags would try to like have Engram be on the perimeter a little bit more, running like some more like receiver type routes, and that didn't work awesome. But I would definitely agree that he's like their best skill position player right now.
I think he's the best pass catcher, like maybe not wide receiver if you're getting technical, but I think he's the best pass catcher.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. It's just people are like, making it about like Ridley and Zay too, which like maybe it should be, but I don't know. He's been doing really well. I was really excited to see I forget if it was his first or second touchdown. I'm pretty sure it was his first touchdown, but he ran like kind of like out to the right 3 steps and then cut back into the left, and it was, which is called an angle route, and he ran that like behind someone who was running just a drag route to kind of clear out space, and that's just like a staple red zone tight end play. It's called Y trail, and like I feel like I've talked about it on this pod before because Peterson is a huge tight end guy, and that was like a staple for their offense in Philadelphia in the red zone. It was like, I can't tell you how many touchdowns I saw Zach Ertz score on that same route. So it was pretty cool to see like the usage or the scheme for Engram's touchdown on that one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. And I don't know, it very much just feels like an offense that, you know, like you had said, you know, the expectation was for a three-headed monster plus Evan Engram plus Travis Etienne. How are you going to cover all these guys? And him and Christian Kirk are the only ones who have really, it seemed like, you know, met that expectation. Like Zay Jones has the second fewest yards per target of his career right now. And the first fewest was when he was in Buffalo. Yeah, it's not good. He had 2.7 yards per target yesterday.
Oh man. He's just like, yeah. I tried saying it last week of like when I was saying like the deep and intermediate stuff wasn't gonna work, but he's just like not fully healthy. So I feel like even the fact that he had 30 yards or whatever it was is almost impressive. He had a lot of targets to get those 30 yards, so that's why it's
not wrong. Gus, do you have any resounding hot takes to carry us out with?
I don't know if this is really a hot take, but I'm definitely expecting Lamar Jackson to become the 8th passer to reach 300 yards, 300 passing yards specifically, against the Jaguars this coming Sunday night. Partly because like Lamar has definitely been like, he's always been trying to pass more than he runs, but especially this year in Todd Monken's offense, he's like very much so like a passer who will sometimes scramble then vice versa. So I think Zay Jones and Odell and Isaiah Likely are definitely gonna get theirs on Sunday night. Go ahead.
I'm fighting for my fantasy football playoff life, and I released Isaiah Likely earlier this week. And the guy I'm playing picked him up.
Oh no! Who do you instead? Who did you who start this week?
Brevin Jordan.
They
were playing the Jets. Everybody in Houston told me Brevin Jordan was going to have a breakout game.
Only because Dalton Schultz is out, and it's like, oh, because the tight end one is out, that means the tight end two, he's going to put up
darn right
45 fantasy points.
Yeah, darn right. I didn't think CJ Stroud was going to get outplayed by Zach Wilson.
I did not either. That was a surprise to me. I liked the Texans a lot in that game.
So for as much as it seems like the sky is falling in Jacksonville, go ahead and dip your toes over in the Houston Texans online community. That's the sky that's falling. Nico's hurt, Tank's hurt, now Stroud's hurt. Their defense getting diced up by Zach Wilson. They're freaking out over there.
Who got hurt too? What was his injury?
I think hamstring, something like that. I honestly just kind of pulled hamstring. It just sounded right. Let me look.
Do you know if Justin Jefferson's re-injury was like related to his hamstring? Because that
no, it was a chest injury.
Oh man!
Because Josh Dobbs threw him a complete hospital ball.
Yikes, man!
I'm glad that Josh Dobbs bit is over. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fun while it lasted, but
it
was never gonna last a lot longer.
Nico Collins left with a calf injury on the first drive of the game.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, didn't come back. So Houston only had 135 yards of total offense. And that's not even like a great defense. That's against a good defense.
The Jets?
Yeah, that's not a great defense.
I would say they're a great defense. I think they're like bottom level of like top tier of defenses.
They're top 12.
I'll give them top 8, but okay.
That's fair enough. I'm also working off. I saw several Jets fanboys comparing them to 2000 Ravens at the start of the year when Robert Saleh had his, "We've played a bunch of top quarterbacks and we've embarrassed all of them," quote. Maybe I'm working off that. But so for as bad as things are for the Jaguars, it definitely feels like things are just as bad. And that was the other thing for the Jaguars. They can at least, I think, somewhat stomach this loss because Houston and the Colts both lost too. They got lucky with that one. But this week, Colts play the Steelers, and I want to say Houston plays the Titans. I could be wrong on that.
I don't know.
Houston plays the Titans and Colts play the Steelers. So, I don't know. We'll see if Davis Mills starts that game or not. But, I mean, those are two games that are probably up in the air. So,
so you're telling Jags fans to root for the Titans and the Steelers this week, John?
That's right. They could try rooting for the Jaguars, but I'm not sure how far it's going to get them.
That's just so funny the way it worked out, though. It's like, yeah, if you want your favorite team to make the playoffs, like root for your two least favorite teams or like your team's two biggest rivals.
I do want to say I am basking in. I wrote an article last Sunday about how the Jaguars weren't getting any help from the guys that were playing their Colts and the Texans. And longtime columnist was very dismissive of me. It was like, oh, there's no way they don't win the division. They only need the Packers to win. Take two of these and call me in the morning, buddy.
I don't think I got any simmering takes. What about you?
Yeah, that's all right. I'm about taked out on that one.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back Friday morning to preview Jaguars and the Ravens. Not sure which way we're going to lean on that one, but we shall be back. So thank you guys for joining us. John Shipley, my co-host Gus Logue. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back on Friday.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.